Well, you didn't have to wait for 2 weeks, just 2 days. This is the Truth, Honour and Integrity Show. My name's Thomas Williams. Enjoy the show. Hi all, and welcome to the Truth, Honour and Integrity Show. We have another cobbled together show, but tightly knit and woven dot connector and reaffirm it all in the one show. And I hope you all got much out of the Exposé 8 show we did on Tuesday. And there is a follow-up of information to that in this show. And work on From Russia With Love Plus 7 is at an advanced stage and will be ready in a week or so's time. There will be a Zoom call a week tomorrow that is mainly for North American members, but all are welcome to attend to receive the information. Now that call will be Friday, April the 2nd at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I'm hoping many of you will attend, as it will be an interesting call, and if it's not interesting, we'll have a laugh anyway. So let's get one thing straight about this medical tyranny ongoing on the general public. They can say that they are interested in our health, and I can spend a whole show proving otherwise. But the Milgram experiment people who believe authority at the expense of basic common sense need a reality check. You say we should trust authority, and in particular the doctors and nurses know better. Yet they don't train in medical cures. Not one minute of it in a 7-year course. You say we should trust doctors and nurses, but they, apart from a very few who are chemists, have no idea what is in creams, pills or potions, and so are unaware of what they are prescribing for their patients. You say we should trust the hospitals and their staff, whilst the official figures place those institutions as the third leading cause of death in America due to medical malpractice. Gun crimes totals just 4-6% of deaths compared to medical malpractice. Roughly for every death by gun, 19 people die of medical malpractice. Where is the bill preventing those deaths, Pelosi? Why didn't Trump deal with it either? These are the facts of the matter. People will continue to fear the disease until they realise that fear is the disease. And the problem is the masses have never looked for the truth, as whoever can provide them with illusions becomes their master. Whoever attempts to destroy their illusions easily becomes their victim. The solution is replace the reptilian brain with heart thinking. I was asked this week to watch a short video on a tarot reader this week. That was basically about Kim Goguen. And I have to say it was very close to the mark in the reading of her. And I agree with the card reader. Kim is in big trouble. She has lost her way badly on many levels, but in particular, from my perspective, herself. And to all the hangers-on around her, not one of you have helped her. And yes, I know she's verbally aggressive. It is a common trait of those who wish to cover up weaknesses within themselves. But sitting there and playing yes people has not helped her one iota. You have all failed her. Someone has to tell her she's so far off track now, it's painful for those who cared for her to see. She's miles away from the person 12 months ago. Miles away, like a distant dot on the horizon. An horizon she is in danger of disappearing over into oblivion. Should I care about her after what she did and said to me? For many people, the answer would be no. But I like to care about all people, regardless. And some say that is wrong, as you get burnt. And yes, I can see that. But we've all been wronged, fooled, and done wrong in life, and it's all about how you correct it. Now, one of the lead figures who made up lies to denigrate me and our group from Team Bubba this week, and when you add that to the disenfranchised Life Force members joining, reapplied to come back into the group this week with a verbal of apologies. And that is enough for me. Because if that person messes up again, it does not affect my life, just their own. And this is what the dwindling remnants of Team Bubba and Co. don't get. You're not getting at me. You're just using lies to discredit someone you know deep within you is not as you portray publicly. And those people are only damaging themselves. They don't operate within the truth, only a perceived vengeance against someone else. But that is just the projection. And the same applies with Kim. As the woman on the video stated, and I agree, she's in big trouble on a personal level, show level, work level, and more importantly, a higher level. And people frightened to make her accountable for being fear of being cut out of the trust funds, which may or may not arrive, have not helped her one bit. She's in big trouble, and that was what I kept warning you all about for many, many months. A and the lack of shadow and inner work is now in your face for all to see, as I warned of 6 years ago. Right, let's get into the show. Just flashback went through my head. The two words that I mentioned for this year, resistance and renaissance. If ever there is a person that renaissance applies to, it's the trustee yourself. Right. Let's get into some news. The Biden administration is restricting the information that Border Patrol agents and sector chiefs can share with the media as a surge of migrants test the agents' capacity at the southern border, according to 4 current and 2 former Customs and Border Protection officials. Now, the officials say that the restrictions are seen as unofficial gag orders and are often referred to that way amongst other colleagues, and the officials requested anonymity because they are not authorised to speak to the media about this very topic. Now, Border Patrol officials have been told to deny all media requests for ride-alongs with agents along the southern land border. Local press officers are instructed to send all information queries, even from local media, to the press office in Washington for approval. And those responsible for cultivating data about the number of migrants in custody have been reminded not to share the information with anyone to prevent leaks, really. Multiple news organizations, including NBC News, have requested access to or photos from inside overcrowded border processing facilities, which is holding unaccompanied migrant children, and they've been denied. Funny, the press were all allowed there when Trump was in charge, but not now. And the DHS press office released one photo late on Tuesday of a mother and child undergoing a health screening inside a border facility, but no wider shots to show conditions or sleeping arrangements. And the point is, where is the media outrage on this? Where is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez standing wailing at a empty field? And these fascist-style controls to cover up either sinister or negligent actions taken by the Biden government. And who's making them accountable? They were quick to jump when it was Trump in charge, twisting stories in the narrative. So what is the difference? Is their reactions compared to the last president, where they created stories just to denigrate the president, and now they are ignoring blatant cover-ups? I suspect we may have to get used for this type of journalistic stories for at least the next 4 years. Doesn't mean to say we're not going to expose it, because we will. The Federal Reserve, under the directive of the Black Sun, kept rates anchored near zero and maintained the current pace of asset purchases following the conclusion of this week's meeting. Officials also upgraded expectations for GDP growth and inflation and cut estimates for the unemployment rate. I would reverse both of them personally. And more members foresee rate hikes in coming years, but not enough to change the forecast for no rate changes till at least 2023. The Federal Reserve are active in the transfer of wealth from the West to the East, and so their comments are not based in what is best for the country, only for the dark force factions. House Democrats. This is a mind-boggling story, this. On Tuesday, blocked proposed legislation from freshman Marionette Miller Meeks of Iowa that would have required illegal immigrants released into the US to receive a negative COVID-19 test. The REACT Act would require migrants released into the United States by Immigration and Customs Enforcement and also Customs and Border Patrol would first have to test negative for the coronavirus. Miller Meek's measure was brought up on the floor a day after the Iowa congresswoman joined some of her colleagues for a trip to see the immigration crisis in El Paso, Texas. And the GOP calls to consider the measure were all blocked by Democrats. I guess Ms. Meeks found out you cannot talk common sense in Washington. But let's put this into perspective, shall we? If you're traveling by plane, you need a negative COVID test to protect the citizens. But if you come into the country outside of the visa-based system, you don't. Does that make any sense? Then it's a program, then, is it not? You people voted for these clowns? The Education Department announced this week it would fully forgive the federal loans of borrowers who enrolled in schools that engaged in certain misconduct. Under the Trump administration, some students were given partial relief, according to the department, and the Education Department estimates the new formula could help approximately 72,000 borrowers receive $1 billion, according to the new Secretary of Education, Miguel Cardona, who said a close review of these claims and the associated evidence showed these borrowers have been harmed and we will grant them a fresh start from their debt. Now, in 2019, then Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, sister of Blackwater Eric Prince, faced intense scrutiny over her handling of the issue when she appeared before the House Education and Labour Committee. Now, the Education Department says it will now ensure borrowers with approved claims have a streamlined path to receiving full loan discharges, including individuals who previously received less than a full loan discharge. For more than 4 years, he said, defrauded borrowers and their families have lived under a cloud of education debt that they should not have to repay. And then did a political statement and said, I applaud the Biden administration for doing the right thing by making these borrowers whole, and I can only imagine the mixture of joy and relief they are feeling today. And this announcement is life-changing for tens of thousands of people across the country. So much for the previous promises of deleting all student debt. That was promised at least 3 times last year alone. National Democrats rushed to Twitter this week to blame white supremacy and racism for the mass shooting spree that targeted massage parlors in the Atlanta area. But police officials say the suspect claimed the deadly shootings were not racially motivated. And according to the Cherokee County Sheriff's Office, Captain Jay Baker, he apparently has an issue, what he considers a sex addiction, and sees these locations as a temptation for him that he wanted to eliminate. There was 2 other alleged shootings this week. And I say alleged, as it is funny how these mass shootings happen just after a major bill or discussion on banning guns comes out of Washington. Remember Pelosi's recent bill? Was it H.R. 8 or H.R. 3, something like that? But in the other 2 shootings in Texas and Colorado, there was no mention of racial overtones were applied to the stories. Could it be that both those shooters in those incidents were not white? And race is only applied these days to denigrate one colour. Time will tell. An independent study commissioned by the Roman Catholic Church has uncovered hundreds of cases of sexual violence committed by clergy and laymen in Germany's top diocese, according to a report last Thursday. Now, the long-awaited 800-page report on the Cologne diocese found 202 perpetrators of sexual assault and 314 victims between 1975 and 2018, according to the attorney mandated by the church, Bjorn Gerk. And he said more than half of the victims were children under the age of 14. That is another victory for the truth. These Catholic and other churches have got away with mass levels of abuse of children for decades. And the very fact your church has covered this abuse up for so long is the responsibility of the people who go to the churches. Going to church makes you complicit in these crimes. And I'm sorry if people are offended by that, but people within those communities must have known what was going on and did or said nothing. That makes you complicit by your own silence. You know, it's funny how all people gossip about each other in churches or at any other functions. Yet when the so-called authorities are committing crimes, it's all hushed up. That practice has to stop. There was a heated exchange this week between Senator Rand Paul and Anthony I Don't Give a Fauci, who's the director of NIH, during a Senate hearing. And the disagreement centred around Dr. I Don't Give a Fauci advice that people already vaccinated must continue to wear masks due to the risks from the COVID-19 variants. And this was all done whilst Dr. Fauci was not wearing a mask. You know, the hypocrisy of those who enforce these conditions on people will continue on unabated until we the people stand up and stop it. Common sense question. I know you like these, Ramona. If social distancing works and should be enforced, why doesn't it apply on flights, trains or public transport? And here's the latest. People may need to wear face coverings and socially distance for several years until we return to normality, according to a leading clown this week. Mary Ramsey, the head of immunisation at Public Health England, said basic measures could be in place until other countries successfully roll out jabs. There's always that kicking the can down the road. The COVID variant, well, other countries haven't taken it. Neglecting that you've already put a program in stopping Brits from flying anyway. So why does it make any difference? There I go again, talking common sense. And she also said the return of big spectator events required careful monitoring and clear instructions about staying safe. And the Defence Secretary has not ruled out the foreign holiday ban being extended, which is what we told you weeks ago. And Ben Wallace told BBC One's Andrew Marshall that booking a break abroad now would be premature and potentially risky. Now, the UK set another record for the number of coronavirus vaccine doses given in a single day on Saturday, with 873,000 jabs. The reality is they're just going to keep rolling out excuse after excuse after excuse, and lockdowns will roll on forever. Coming soon, the new wave. All manufactured to delay, stall and prevent the people returning to what they think was normal. You know why we can't return to normal? Because what was normal before this engineered virus no longer exists. Now, I wrote that on Saturday or Sunday, and the following day, right on cue, as if by magic, Coronavirus cases are rising exponentially in Germany, officials warn, as continental Europe braces for a third wave of infections. And the German Chancellor Angela Hitler Merkel said it was likely that the country would now need to apply an emergency brake and reimpose lockdown measures. France, Poland and other nations are also reintroducing restrictions. And the German Nazi Health Minister, Jens Spahn, said that Europe lacks the vaccines needed to significantly reduce cases. And he said, we have to be honest about the situation. No, you're not. In Europe, we don't have enough vaccines to stop a third wave through vaccinations alone, he said. Really? Now, the vaccine rollout across the EU has been hindered by delayed deliveries, as well as the suspension in several countries of the Oxford-AstraZeneca COVID-19 techno jab over fears of provable side effects. India has placed a temporary hold on all exports of the Oxford-AstraZeneca techno jab, according to the foreign ministry sources this week. And they said rising cases meant domestic demand was expected to pick up in the coming weeks, and so the doses were needed for India's own rollout. Now, the move, described as a temporary squeeze by officials, is expected to affect supplies until the end of April, and some 190 countries under the COVAX scheme are likely to be affected. Now, the scheme, which is led by the World Horror Organization, aims to ensure techno jabs are shared fairly amongst all nations. And India's largest vaccine manufacturer, the Serum Institute of India, has delayed shipments of the AstraZeneca jab to several countries in recent days, including the UK and Brazil. Now, India has exported more than 60 million vaccine doses to 76 countries so far, with the majority of these being the AstraZeneca jab. And there you have it. There's still a lot of talk about President Trump in the alt media. And we've said some things that Trump followers don't like. But I report facts. I don't live in delusion. And the facts begin to mount up that suggests he was not all he was made out to be from a public perspective. Perhaps this next piece will make you rethink your position. Mr. Trump this week urged all Americans to get the coronavirus vaccine in a Fox exclusive interview on Tuesday, touting its efficacy as well as being a safe vaccine, and it's something that works, he said. I would recommend it, and I would recommend it to a lot of people that don't want to get it, and a lot of those people voted for me, frankly, he told Bartiromo. It's a great vaccine, he said. It's a safe vaccine, and it's something that works. In his own words. But this is the man who people are wanting back in the White House. But remember, A, Trump put us all under lockdown after funds received from the trustee. B, Trump made available the techno jabs for all Americans, some mandatory after further funding from the trustee. and this despite him knowing that A, the virus was engineered and not as harmful as made out, B, he also sent $10 billion of American people's money to the UK-based AstraZeneca, despite their appalling record with vaccines, and C, allowed his son-in-law and FEMA to block American companies selling PPEs to Americans. Now, I appreciate and know more than most the skullduggery and forced and enforced decision-making games that go on in the Capitol. But these are facts attributed to Mr. Trump. And I have to say it, none of those actions have helped the people he stated he would serve and protect. A United Nations report has laid bare this week the appalling cost of lockdowns in some of the world's poorest countries. Now, the report, Direct and Indirect Effects of COVID-19 Pandemic and Response in South Asia, examines the effect of the unprecedented government shutdown policies on healthcare, social services, education and the economy. And it estimates that the disruption in healthcare services caused by the government response to COVID-19 in Afghanistan, Nepal, Bangladesh, India, Pakistan and Sri Lanka, home to some 1.8 billion people in total, may have led to 239,000 maternal and child deaths. This compares to around 186,000 deaths with COVID-19, meaning the lockdowns are estimated to have killed considerably more than the virus. 186,000 attributed deaths to COVID-19, which is a lot smaller as we know, and 239,000 maternal and child deaths because of the cutbacks. Furthermore, 228,000 is the estimated lockdown death toll just of children under the age of 5, almost none of whom would have been at any risk from the virus. And with the majority of COVID deaths worldwide being amongst the over 80s, the difference in terms of quality adjusted life years must be staggering. And it says the number of children being treated for severe malnutrition fell by more than 80% in Bangladesh and Nepal. That doesn't mean malnutrition fell by 80%. The malnutrition people were not being treated for it. A rise, in essence. And immunisation among children dropped by 35% and 65% in India and Pakistan. The report also said that the child mortality rose the highest in India in 2020, up by 15.4%, followed by Bangladesh at 13%. Sri Lanka saw the sharpest increase in maternal deaths, 21.5%, followed by Pakistan's 21.3%. And experts in India fear that malnutrition rates will be significantly worse across the country as the data comes in over the next few months. And a separate UN report in December estimated that an additional 207 million people could be pushed into extreme poverty over the next decade due to the long-term impacts of the lockdowns, just as we forecasted. This was a shutdown of the old system, which we had stated had fell. There is no going back to what it was. It doesn't exist. And the only path forward now is the people coming together. A group of countries, including Russia and China and a host of others, have united this past week to call out America's decades-long disregard for the core founding of the principle of the United Nations of maintaining international peace and security. Now, the United Nations was created after World War II with one chief aim: to prevent the scourge of war. Actually, no, it was to consolidate power in the hands of the few. But in Article 1, Section 1 of the governing document of the United Nations, the UN Charter, states that prime amongst the purposes of the United Nations is to maintain international peace and security, and to that end, to take effective collective measures for the prevention and removal of threats to the peace, and for the suppression of acts of aggression or other breaches of the peace, and to bring about by peaceful means and in conformity with the principles of justice and international law, adjustment or settlement of international disputes or situations which might lead to a breach of the peace. That's all in their own charter. And it's all very well stating that, but which country or any country or group of countries enforced it? The answer is none. Also, while two countries goose-stepped all over the planet, invading over 100 countries between them since World War II, committed dozens of atrocities, killed millions and destroyed whole countries and their infrastructure, and the rest of the world did what? Nothing. Those two countries are America and Israel, cajoled and controlled by the banking elites. Why? Because wars make money for them, and they care not for the cost of life or destruction. None. But who would have thought, when we had Bonnie and Clyde and Butch Cassidy, Jesse James, Billy the Kid and others, who were stealing money from the other side of the counter in banks, to banks employing those ilk of people to stealing money off of the clientele. They had masks then, and they have masks now. But in Article 2 of the Charter, goes on to explicitly ban the threat or use of force, as well as intervention in the domestic affairs of other countries. Israel. Langley. Such prohibitions were informed by the horrors of World War II, including the Holocaust, which emanated not from Nazi Germany, but an infiltrated national Zionist Germany aggressive war in Europe. I keep seeing that term, one description before the name, Nazi Germany. It becomes a meme. And the German people need to complain about the use of that word before their country, as it's far too prevalent in its use and not indicative of the German people then or over 80 years later. Now, it's stated that the nations of the world wanted to prevent such an evil from ever happening again. Hello, Palestine. And the UN Secretary General Kofi Annan would later state, "No principle of the Charter is more important than the principle of non-use of force, as embodied in Article 2 of the UN Charter." And what that confirms is the UN is a failed entity. as no one has done anything to stop the genocide of peoples all over the world. Endless streams of chatter and bollocks, that's all it is. And zero in terms of beneficial actions for the benefit of the people. Just as predicted recently, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu could struggle to secure enough seats in Parliament to stay in power, as incomplete results from Tuesday's elections show. With almost 90% of the votes counted, his right-wing bloc is on course to win 59 seats, too short of the threshold. And in a surprise development, an Arab party, which is projected to get 5 seats, could hold the balance of power. Now, the final outcome will, among other things, determine the course of Israel's relations with the Palestinians. And the Arab party, Ram, has not declared whether it will support the efforts of Mr. Netanyahu, an unnatural ally, to form a governing coalition, or those of the blocks of parties opposed to him remaining in office. Now, the Netanyahu opponents are projected to win 56 seats, and although backing from Ram could give them a majority, they are fragmented and unlikely to be able to agree to work together. If neither bloc succeeds, the country will face its 5th election since 2019. All of which means Nutty stays in power regardless. I told you, it's a rigged system over there. Final piece before the music break. Here we go again, a new private club for the greed-based humanity sellouts with their banal-based fresh air tokens. A radical experiment is being considered in the US state of Nevada. It would allow new local governments to be formed on land owned by tech firms. Jeffrey Burns, the cryptocurrency millionaire who proposed the idea, is convinced of its revolutionary potential. The challenge now is changing the minds of skeptics who are not, for some, one man's utopia is their dystopia. Now, loosely translated from ancient Greek, utopia means nowhere, a place that doesn't exist. Kind of fitting, if you ask me, as it's in line with the fresh air tokens. But for now, this is an apt description of the place Mr. Burns and his software company, Blockchains, believe could become somewhere extraordinary. And that place is a barren plot of land spanning 67,000 acres in Nevada's rural Story County. And Burns bought the land for $170 million in 2018. Now, on this site, he hopes to develop a smart city from the internet up, named Painted Rock. It would include all the trappings of a typical city, homes, schools and businesses, but with one fundamental difference. Residents would use the city's services and cryptocurrency on digital applications built with database technology known as blockchain, which was unveiled last year. The plans envision a city of more than 36,000 residents, 15,000 homes and 11 million square foot of commercial space, and zero common sense. Now, blockchain estimates that eventually the city will generate $4.6 billion in output annually. And for this to happen, Mr. Burns says a new model of local government is needed in Nevada. This government, he says, their own government, I might add, would have powers to raise taxes, enforce the law and administer public services such as schools, utilities and transport. And he said there are some really cool things we could develop if we had the area and the flexibility to do it, and that's what this is about. Now, the vision has found favour with Nevada's Democratic Governor Steve Sisolak, and within the next few months he will seek to pass a law that would permit blockchains, the company, and other companies to create self-governing innovation zones in the state. Under the proposal, only high-tech businesses with at least 50,000 acres of land that promised to invest $1.25 billion would be able to form the innovation zones. And these zones would initially be overseen by three supervisors, puppets, appointed by the governor, another puppet. Now, elections for this supervisory board would only be held once 100 residents live in the zone, which would be subject to state law. There's no end to their levels of skullduggery. Creating their own government, these tech firms, is essentially now putting it in people's faces. As it seems, these tech giants, along with their agency clowns, run the government anyway. And it's a classic case again of money talks. And this is why they wish to deny people funds, as it ends their hegemony, and they know some people will coalesce and improve life for the many, not the few. But this is welcome to Cyberdyne and the Terminator world, a world of robots, compliant people acting like bots, where everything will be smart. Not clever smart, but sting or burn smart. And one of our members called it right, SMART, S-M-A-R-T, Secret Military Armament and Resilience Technology. And it's only smart if you turn it off. These clowns and their world needs to be separated from we the people. Let them have their techno world, but put them within a walled perimeter with no interaction with we the people. Immigration to their world will only be bots. But for us, it's time to go our separate ways. Right, this next portion is a follow-up to the eugenics war show done on Tuesday. And you can visit thi-show.com if you haven't heard that show yet. And whilst it reaffirms many of the things we have put out previously in the expose series, it does have some deeper and newer connections added into the mix. Yet again, a myriad of dot connections. Now, the AstraZeneca vaccine is being promoted for developing countries in part because it doesn't require the deep freeze cold storage that the mRNA vaccines do. And so the logistics surrounding the distribution are less complex. Now, patents and royalties for the AstraZeneca vaccine are held by a private company called Vacitech, investors of which include Go Ogle Ventures, the Wellcome Trust, the Chinese branch of Sequoia Capital, the Chinese drug company Fosun Pharma, and the British government. Now, the AstraZeneca vaccine was co-developed by Adrian Hill, who has a long-term ties to the British eugenics movement through his work with Wellcome Trust Centre for Human Genetics and affiliation with the Galton Institute, formerly the UK Eugenics Society. Now, members of the Galton Institute have called for population reduction in Latin America, South and Southeast Asia and Africa, and the very areas where the AstraZeneca vaccine is being promoted, according to the article. While the two currently available COVID-19 vaccines in the US are based on novel mRNA technology, which in actuality are experimental gene therapies and not true vaccines, the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine is a bit different. It uses chimpanzee adenovirus vectors genetically engineered to express the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein instead. Monkeys. Now, James Corbett of the Corbett Report interviewed a person by the name of Whitney Webb, who is a writer and researcher and covers intelligence, big tech, surveillance and civil liberties, about some of the basic differences between these vaccines. And they delved into the curious ties between Oxford University in the UK, AstraZeneca, and also the British eugenics movement, a topic Webb covered in her in-depth December 26th, 2020 report, Developers of Oxford AstraZeneca Vaccine Tied to UK Eugenics Movements, which was co-written with Jeremy Lofredo. Now, there is a myth about the profiting on this vaccine, the not-for-profit myth. And Webb points out that one of the reasons the AstraZeneca vaccine is being promoted for developing countries is because it doesn't require the deep freeze cold storage. And so the logistics are far less cumbersome and less complex. But as a result, Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, has partnered with AstraZeneca to bring the vaccine to the developing world, including Africa and Egypt. Now, whilst AstraZeneca has promised it will not make any profit from its vaccine, there is a time limit on this pledge that most media pundits fail to note. The not-for-profit vow expires once the pandemic is over. And AstraZeneca itself appears to have a say when that pandemic comes to an end. They are going to declare the end date. So many of you now be thinking, well, where are they going to make the money? We'll find out. And the end date for the end of the pandemic is being forecast as July the 1st, 2021, according to a company memo that was obtained by the Financial Times in the UK. And as explained by Webb, the patents and royalties for the AstraZeneca vaccine are held by a private company called Vaccitech, and the investors of which include Bravos, B-R-A-A-V-O-S, which is a capital investment company set up by the Deutsche Bank executive. Go Ogle Ventures, the Wellcome Trust, the Chinese branch of Sequoia Capital, the Chinese drug company Fosun Pharma, and also the British government. And all of these investors stand to profit from this vaccine at some point in the near future. And Vaccitech has been quite open about the future profit potential with its shareholders, noting that the COVID-19 vaccine will most likely become an annual vaccine that is updated each season, much like the seasonal flu vaccine. And in an article, Web quotes Vaccitech's CEO Bill Enright, who promised that investors will receive a big chunk of the royalties from a successful vaccine, as well as milestone payments, even when the pandemic is declared over and the COVID-19 vaccines becomes a seasonal event. So who are the players? Well, the actual developer of the vaccine, Webb explains, is the Jenner Institute for Vaccine Research, founded in 1995 as a public-private partnership with GlaxoSmithKline and the British government. And after a few years, a reorganisation took place, turning the Jenner Institute into a partnership between the University of Oxford and the Pirbright Institute, previously known as the Institute for Animal Health. And the Jenner Institute is also part of the Oxford Vaccine Group. The next section. The AstraZeneca vaccine has also received US funding. In 2020, the company received $1 billion in funding for its COVID-19 vaccine from the US Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority, BARDA, who we covered previously, which is part of the Health and Human Services Office of the Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response. They also received $10 billion from the Trump government as well. $11 billion. Dr. Anthony I Don't Give a Fauci, the head of NIAID, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, is amongst those who have promoted the idea that the COVID-19 vaccine will need to become an annual inoculation, which will allow Vaccitech and its investors to massively profit well into the future. And among the profiteers will be the Wellcome Trust, which, like other Vaccitech investors, is part of the technocratic globalist network. Wellcome is the largest charity in the UK that funds innovative biomedical research. It was formed in 1936 after the death of Sir Henry Wellcome, a pharmaceutical pioneer and progressive industrialist, and their board consists of present or former bankers, Silent W, insurance executives and investment board members. No health people. Sir Henry Wellcome, while still alive, founded the company, and that went on to become GlaxoSmithKline. So the Wellcome Trust is essentially the philanthropic arm of GlaxoSmithKline. We mentioned Adrian Hill and his ties to eugenics. Now, Adrian Hill is the director of the Jenner Institute and a lead developer of the AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine. Hill also heads the UK Vaccine Network, a government entity that decides where to funnel funding and vaccine technology. And one of Hill's bosses early on in his career and his thesis advisor when he was a doctoral student was the late David Weatherall, founder of the Weatherall Institute of Molecular Medicine, which is a research institute at the University of Oxford. But Weatherall was also a member of the Galton Institute from a time when it was known as the UK Eugenics Society, and he remained a member until his death in 2018. And Hill gave a lecture at Galton in 2008 for his 100 year anniversary. Now, arguably the most troubling of all is the direct link of the vaccine's lead developers to the Wellcome Trust, and in the case of Adrian Hill, the Galton Institute, both groups have long-standing ties to the UK eugenics movement. The latter organisation, named for the father of eugenics, Francis Galton, is the renamed UK Eugenics Society, a group that was notorious for over a century for its promotion of racist pseudoscience and the efforts to improve racial stock by reducing the population of those deemed inferior. Now, the ties of Adrian Hill to the Galton Institute should raise obvious concerns, given the push to make the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine he developed with Sarah Gilbert the vaccine of choice for the developing world, particularly countries in Latin America, South and Southeast Asia and Africa, the very areas where the Galton Institute past members have called for reducing population growth. Now, they can say it's in those countries, but the most prominent push currently of the AstraZeneca vaccine is in predominantly white countries as well. We must include all colours. While the Galston Institute has attempted to distance itself from its past of promoting racial eugenics with service-level public relations efforts, it has not stopped family members of the infamous racist from achieving leadership positions at the Institute. Emeritus Professor of Molecular Genetics at Galton Institute and one of its officers is none other than David J. Galton, whose work includes Eugenics, the Future of Human Life in the 21st Century. Now, David Galton has written the Human Genome Mapping Project, which was originally dreamt up by Galton's former president, Walter Bodmer, which has enormously increased the scope for eugenics because of the development of a very powerful technology that manipulates the DNA, which is what we said in Exposé 1 and 2 back in May. And this new wider definition of eugenics, Galton has said, would cover methods of regulating population numbers as well as improving genome quality by selective artificial insemination by donor, gene therapy or gene manipulation of germline cells. Remember the show we did about endonuclease and all that stuff? This is what this is referring to. In expanding on this new definition, Galton is neutral as to whether some methods should be compulsory by the state or left entirely to the personal choice of the individual. Next section, Hill and the Wellcome Trust Centre for Human Genetics. And Hill holds a senior position at the Wellcome Trust Centre for Human Genetics, and one of his former students there was Sarah Gilbert, who served as a programme director for the centre. Now, Gilbert is also the co-founder of Vacitech and a lead researcher on the COVID-19 vaccine, along with Hill. Now, at the Centre for Human Genetics, Hill's focus has been population genetics and race, particularly in Africa. In general terms, the centre investigates race genetics and susceptibility to diseases and infertility. Hill's speciality is genetics and respiratory illnesses. Well, I never. The Wellcome Trust is also the archivist for the Eugenics Society, which is now called the Galton Institute. And Whitney Webb writes, the crossroads between race and genes is important in the centre's work, as an entire working group at the centre called the Myers Group, M-Y-E-R-S, is dedicated to mapping the genetic impacts of migration events, which was what has happened in recent years into Europe, mass migration events caused by the Soros Group. Now, the centre also funded a paper that argued that so long as eugenics is not coercive, it is an acceptable policy initiative. And the paper asks, is the fact that an action or policy is a case of eugenics necessarily a reason not to do it? And according to Hill's page on the Wellcome Trust site, race and genetics have long played a central role in his scientific approach, and his group currently focuses on the role genetics plays in African populations with regard to susceptibility to specific infectious diseases. As Webb said in an interview, eugenics never really disappeared. It's simply rebranded into more acceptable terms revolving around public health. Word salad, in other words. And this raises all sorts of questions, starting with, why is AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine, which has such strong eugenics ties, being earmarked for and marketed specifically to developing countries? The next section is called Anti-Racism Agenda or Eugenics. Now, Webb points out how so-called woke vaccine policy is using systemic racism as a justification for making sure the COVID-19 vaccine is given to minorities first. Such justifications become all the more questionable, if not outright suspicious, in light of the eugenics angle, which tends to be heavily focused on reducing populations of blacks and various native groups. And in the case of the AstraZeneca vaccine, Webb suspects there is an ulterior profit motive behind its not-for-profit pledge to developing countries. Because if the vaccine ends up being an annual inoculation, they may insist you keep getting the same brand. This way, if AstraZeneca ends up getting a majority share of the market from the start, Vaccitech and its investors will ultimately reap the greatest profits in years to come. But in addition to the profit angle, there is also the possibility that they might alter the vaccine at any point in the future to fit the eugenics agenda, and no one would be the wiser. That is why the mRNA is being released. That is to test it. And Webb noted in an article there are plans in place to exercise what could reasonably be described as economic coercion, to pressure people into voluntarily getting vaccinated. And such coercion will be obviously more effective on poor and working communities, meaning communities of colour, will be disproportionately affected as well. Now, this is what we have stated of what happens if they turn around and say you can't get your pensions or social security benefits without proof of the vaccines. That makes it mandatory under coercion. You know, the first step is you can't fly or go abroad without the jab. The next step is you can't go to sporting venues, followed by more stringent methods. And this is why we have to nip it in the bud at the beginning. They'll just keep rolling unless we put up the barrier and say no. Now, considering these facts and the case for scrutinising the safety of Oxford AstraZeneca's affordable vaccine option made above, any harm caused by vaccine allocation policy in the US and beyond is likely to disproportionately affect poor communities and especially communities of colour. No, this affects us all. As such, the public should take all vaccine rollout policy assertions with a grain of salt, even when they come cloaked in language of inclusion, racial justice, and public health preservation. As the co-founder of the American Eugenics Society, later renamed Society for the Study of Social Biology, who'd have thought the Society for the Study of Social Biology would be a eugenics group? Frederick Osborne put it in 1968, eugenic goals are most likely to be attained under a name other than eugenics. No shit, Sherlock. Now, the next topic is about Africa and how leery they are of the AstraZeneca's gift. And considering the history of Big Pharma using blacks as guinea pigs, both in Africa and in America, it's not surprising that Africans are leery about the gift of the COVID-19 vaccines. They should be wary of all the vaccines going into that country. As just one example, a 2009 Jenner Institute vaccine trial, Jenner we mentioned earlier, in South Africa killed 7 infants. And Webb writes, an investigation conducted by the British Medical Journal found that the Hill-led Jenner Institute had knowingly misled parents about the negative results of and questionable methods used in animal studies, as well as the vaccine being known to be ineffective. I think we covered that story last year. Now, the vaccine in question, an experimental TB vaccine developed jointly by Emergent BioSolutions and the Jenner Institute, was scrapped after the controversial study in infants confirmed what was already known, that the vaccine was ineffective. And concern amongst South Africans has been so widespread that the South African government in early February this year temporarily paused its rollout of the AstraZeneca vaccine. Conflict of interest. The next piece, Go Ogle Ventures. You want to know why Go Ogle are using fact checkers, which is actually fiction checkers, to stifle vaccine and virus information? Well, here's why. Go Ogle Ventures is another investor in Vaccitech. And considering Go Ogle has a vested stake in the success of the COVID-19 vaccine, its policy to censor, quote, vaccine misinformation, unquote, is a clear conflict of interest that they should really be held accountable for. Indeed, it makes no sense that Go Ogle, which stands to profit from the COVID-19 vaccine, is allowed to suppress reporting on it. And disturbingly, Webb points out that, as far as she could tell, she's the only one who has pointed out this link between Go Ogle and the AstraZeneca vaccine. Now, the question is why neither the Trump or Biden administration have made no efforts to stop this. None. And in my opinion, there's no difference between the two administrations. None. Trump initiated the lockdown and launched the vaccines, remember, despite knowing neither was required. He knew. And I know that won't make me popular with some people, but I'm not here to be popular. I'm here to tell you the facts and the truth. He said it earlier in his interview this week. The vaccine's great. Everyone should take it. No, go and F yourself, Mr. Trump. Because the fact is, nobody should take it. Because not a single vaccine has proven to be anywhere near as reliable as your own pissing immune system. They're the facts. And Trump, by his actions and inactions, became complicit in all of this. And it is an uncomfortable fact people should take note of. I wish it was different. It's just not. Next section comes as no surprise. The Gates Foundation. They can also be found in this web of eugenics. And Webb writes, the Wellcome Centre regularly co-funds the research and development of vaccines and birth control methods with the Gates Foundation, a foundation that actively and admittedly engages in population and reproductive control in Africa and South Asia by, among other things, prioritising the widespread distribution of injectable, long-acting, reversible contraceptives called LARCS, LARCS. And the Wellcome Trust has also directly funded studies that sought to develop methods to improve the uptake of LARCS in places such as rural Rwanda. As research Jacob Levitch stated, LARCS afford women in the global south the least choice possible short of actual sterilization. And some LARCS can render women infertile for as long as 5 years. And as Levitch argues, they leave far more control in the hands of providers and less in the hands of women than condoms, oral contraceptives and traditional methods. And one example is Norplant, a contraceptive implant manufactured by Schering, now Bayer, which is Rothschild, that can prevent pregnancy for up to 5 years. And it was taken off the US market in 2002 after more than 50,000 women filed lawsuits against the company and the doctors who prescribed it. And 70 of those class action suits were related to the side effects such as depression, extreme nausea, hair loss, scalp hair loss, ovarian cysts, migraines and excessive bleeding. It was then slightly modified and rebranded as Jadel. Not banned, no. Let's just change the name. All very Hebrew Anunnaki, that. Jadel, J-A-D-E-L-L-E. the dangerous drug was promoted in Africa by the Gates Foundation in conjunction with USAID and Engenda Health. Now, formerly named the Sterilization League for Human Betterment, Engenda's health original mission was inspired by racial genetics and eugenics, was to improve, quote, the biological stock of the human race, unquote. Are any of the COVID vaccines safe, is the next section. And Webb has written quite a number of articles detailing the potential and suspected, if not inevitable, problems with the COVID-19 vaccines, primarily the mRNA gene therapies, since they are the two currently in use in America. In addition to their high risk of allergic reactions, there's compelling evidence to suggest they may trigger severe inflammation and immune dysregulation. And many scientists are also warning of the possibility for pathogenic priming and antibody-dependent enhancement, which will make subsequent infection with the coronavirus far more dangerous than if you were not vaccinated. I'm going to repeat that so it sticks. The scientists are warning of the possibility for pathogenic priming and antibody-dependent enhancement, which will make subsequent infection with the coronavirus far more dangerous than were you not vaccinated. Oops. In a paper titled COVID-19 RNA-based vaccine and the risk of prion disease, P-R-I-O-N, which was published in Microbiology and Infectious Diseases, Dr. Bart Klassen also warns there are also troubling evidences suggesting some of the mRNA shots may cause prion diseases such as Alzheimer's and ALS. How did he know that? Because it was in the flu vaccine is why. That's how my father got Alzheimer's. It's in the flu vaccine. This is the ultra developed flu vaccine, now called COVID-19. Meanwhile, Dr. Patrick Whelan, a pediatric rheumatologist specializing in multi-system inflammatory syndrome, has expressed concern about mRNA vaccine's ability to cause microvascular injury to the brain, heart, liver and kidneys in ways that were not assessed in safety trials. Around the world, reports are now pouring in of people dying shortly after receiving the COVID-19 vaccines. In many cases, they die suddenly within hours of getting the shot. In others, death occurs within a span of a couple of weeks. As of February 12th this year, the number of side effects reported by VAERS totaled 15,923, and deaths of 929. Those deaths are now over 1,300. Pfizer's vaccine has so far been responsible for 58% of deaths in the US VAERS list, while mRNA's vaccine accounts for 41%. As of March 11, Denmark, Norway, Iceland, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania and Luxembourg have all suspended the use of AstraZeneca's vaccine, either in full or in part, following reports of blood clots. There's another 15 or 16 who have in part suspended since. Austria has also suspended a particular batch of AstraZeneca's vaccine in order to complete an investigation into the death of a 49-year-old woman who suddenly developed a severe coagulation disorder. Another Austrian vaccine recipient, a 35-year-old woman, developed acute lung disease from a dislodged blood clot. The same vaccine batch had reportedly been used in Denmark, where a 60-year-old woman died from a blood clot. And according to a March 2nd report by The Defender, UK data showed that the AstraZeneca vaccine has 77% more adverse events and 25% more deaths than the Pfizer vaccine. And they said, to avoid becoming a sad statistic, I urge you to review the science very carefully before making up your mind about this experimental therapy. It is not a vaccine. It's a techno jab that is experimental. And they said, also remember that the lethality of COVID-19 is actually surprisingly low. Zero. You listen closely, John Hopkins. 0. That's a little tiny dot. 0.3. And it's lower, COVID-19 is lower than the flu for those under the age of 60. If you're under the age of 40, your risk of dying from COVID-19, even if you've had a car crash, you know, that's COVID-19 these days. COVID, your risk of dying from COVID-19 under the age of 40 is 0.01%. Meaning you have a 99.99% chance of surviving the infection. And you could improve that to 99.999% if you are metabolically flexible, insulin sensitive and vitamin D replete. Now, the National Vaccine Information Centre recently posted more than 50 video presentations from the pay-per-view 5th International Public Conference on Vaccine held online, which was in October of 2020, and made them available to everyone for free. Now, the conference's theme was protecting health and autonomy in the 21st century, and it featured physicians, scientists and other health professionals, human rights activists, faith community leaders, constitutional and civil rights attorneys, authors and parents of vaccine-injured children, talking about vaccine science, policy, law and ethics and the infectious diseases, including coronavirus and the COVID-19 vaccines. In December of 2020, a UK company published false and misleading information about NVIC and its conference, which prompted NVIC to open the whole conference for free viewing. And they said the conference has everything you need to teach yourself and protect your personal freedoms and liberties with respect to your health. And there you have it. If bots wish to take jabs, let them. The wealth of information against it now is overwhelming. Well, overwhelming. And in the future, what has been made clear by this, we, the people, may have to protect ourselves from those who have taken the jab. Because, like the 5-year jab mentioned earlier, to avoid pregnancies, which proves they've developed a time lag on vaccines. This could be a 5-year jab of an infectious and slow death. Right, next part is children's news. News for the COVIDiot children. There's a man in Canada who, according to Canadians, or certain ones of them anyway, can only be alluded to as he who shall not be named. Except his name is Robert Hoogland. And for the sake of natural justice, it is important to speak this man's name, as he is now the Canadian state prisoner of conscience. So why is he in prison? Well, a warrant was issued by a judge for the arrest of Robert Hoogland for calling his biological female child his daughter, and referring to her with the pronouns she and her. Hoogland is a father of a gender non-conforming biological female 14-year-old girl who identifies as transgender and prefers the use of male pronouns. And Hoogland had repeatedly called this person his daughter, though the court has forbade it. And on Tuesday, in Vancouver, Hoogland surrendered himself to the court in response to the Attorney General of British Columbia's warrant for his arrest for contempt of court for calling his daughter she and her. He was then arrested and jailed, and the warrant was issued by Judge Tamman. Sheer lunacy. Oh, the bloody labels people aspire to. And the child non-common sense-like adjudications thrown into the mix to add to the drama of it all. And this is political correctness on steroids now. The system are running programs on us all, and the stupid people are going along with it. Jail time for calling your child born with a vag your daughter. Seriously. Their world is now descending into total madness. Observe, not absorb, is the best policy. Next bit of childlike news. Joe Biden's administration is too white and heterosexual, according to the view of two Democrat senators who vowed to vote down any non-LGBTQFPYCFU, please shut up with your letters, white nominee. So if you're not a letter or not white, you're okay. Or you're not okay. Until the White House commits to more diversity, Senator Tammy Duckworth, Illinois, and Mazie Hirono, Hawaii, told reporters on Tuesday that they'll vote to approve only non-white or LGBTQ nominees until Biden starts appointing more minorities. While Hirono said her concern is diversity in general, Duckworth is trying to pressure the administration to give more plum jobs to Asian Americans. You are either Asian or you're American. It's that simple. And Pacific Islander candidates. from overview, why is this behaviour only happening in predominantly white countries? Can you imagine a group of white people in non-white countries demanding they be given positions of power? Other than the Rothschilds-led East Indies companies and countries, has that ever happened in modern history? No. Then why is this racist and sexist behaviour tolerated? Duckworth and Hirono should be fired for blatant racist and sexist statements, because if the reverse happened, there would be headlines everywhere of white supremacy. How is that balanced? And Duckworth says, I am a no vote on the floor on all non-diversity nominees. You know I will vote for racial minorities and I will vote for LGBTQ, but anybody else I'm not voting for. Really? Whilst Toronto said that senators would vote against any white or straight candidates until they have a commitment from the administration that more positions will soon be filled by minority candidates, including black, Hispanic, and whatever the hell that means, AAPI representatives. Oh, Pacific Islander candidates. And Hirono said, I'm joining her in that, which means we would like to have a commitment from the White House that there'll be more diversity representation in the cabinet and in senior White House positions. Well, unfortunately for those two, Biden has appointed plenty of minority. They're called Jewish. Who are also not really interested in American interests, by the way. So, this is the story of labels. Some labels need to be included and some deemed no longer suitable. And neither is based on merit or whether capable of doing the task or job at hand. Just appoint said label to create distraction, add fuel via lies and light the touch paper, and then wait for the required reaction. Now, their argument is it should be 50-50 by non-thinkers using John Hopkins math, forgetting, despite the culling of whites and the increase in migration and immigration, this country is still 63% white. This level of programming we have warned of for some time now, and I'm not sure people grasped where it was going at first, is THI a white supremacist show, all about the white race, some will have asked. Yet how many other shows highlight the plights or defend the rights of tens of dozens of countries, its people of all colours and even religions? But no matter which colour you are, I suspect all now are seeing the stark truth of the matter. They are running a programme, using all colours and labels to fulfil an agenda that has been passed down for at least 110,000 years, as From Russia With Love 1 stated. The question is, what are we going to do about it? Another example of childlike behaviour by so-called authorities, and another example of the I am offended by everything, even though it's not offensive. Because if truth is offensive to overly sensitive people, you know what? The offended people are the real problem. People go to great lengths now to find a fence even where there is none. Humour, a system breaker of the algorithm games, now turned into offending something or someone. Doesn't matter who you are. A teacher has been struck off for 2 years for writing a humorous but truthful article, truthful being the operative word, although your perception of it may be different, about his school proms in Denbigh, North Wales. And in one article titled "The Problem with Proms," he called the event a shallow, vacuous affair about nothing more than who has spent the most on looking nice. He wrote that girls often ended up looking like a cross between Eastern European prostitutes and Kardashian clones, and said the boys at the bash snorted coke. He also mocked pupils and their parents for making so much effort for the school prom by spending sums of money they could not afford on gowns and makeup, referring to poorly applied fake tans. He wrote, "The literacy was so poor they can't read the instructions." Mr. Pice referred to overweight girls being shoehorned into gowns and paraded through the town like cattle, and he said proms mean more to them than GCSEs. I'm sorry, but all those statements are true. And it's the same in this country. Parents overspending to outdo other parents. And who gains? The system. And if children are overweight, that is the responsibility of the person and their parents. It is not offensive to say to someone, "You are overweight," when the facts speak for themselves. Why deny it? And fake tans look ridiculous. Look at Trump with his orange tan. Why would you wish to look like a tangerine? And the great common sense question now is, with all this fake tan, is it offensive or embarrassing now to look white? Ponder on that last statement, because that is a program. And the chairman who fired him, Steve Powell, said the comments were critical, were disrespectful, they were likely to cause offence to any pupil or parent who came across the article. No, Mr. Powell. They are only offensive to people who cannot face the truth. And sanctimonious people who get offended by absolutely anything and everything. And with that, it becomes a profession in and of itself. These people are professional non-truthers with zero humour. Unbelievable, those three stories. Unbelievable. Right, there has been much speculation in the alt media of groups declaring themselves as government via assemblies. Is there any factual evidence these type of government exist? What is an assembly? An assembly is related to the church, which fits in with why Anna von Reitz espouses it. But it originated also with the French Revolution, which was pushed and financed by not the French people, but the Rothschilds. And one has to ask whether the church or the Rothschilds have ever done anything beneficial for the people. And the reality is, if you have significant combined numbers of people all working together, you can call or create whatever government you like. Look at the tech giants. They haven't got a name, but they're running the government along with the Siakars. And I personally feel we just need more and better input into and from the current government. The names of it don't matter. It is how it is implemented and operated that is our concern. So what are the different types of governments? Well, here's a rundown of the various forms of government with definitions provided by the World Factbook. I hope it's not by fact checkers. Absolute monarchy, a form of government where the monarch rules unhindered without any laws, constitution or legally organised opposition. Anarchy, a condition of lawlessness or political disorder brought about by the absence of governmental authority. Authoritarian, a form of government in which state authority is imposed onto many aspects of citizens' lives. A commonwealth, a nation, state or other political entity founded on law and united by a compact of the people for the common good. If only that was implemented the right way. Communist, a system of government in which the state plans and controls the economy and a single, often authoritarian, although there's no proof of that, party holds power. State controls are imposed with the elimination of private ownership of property or capital while claiming to make progress towards a higher social order in which all goods are equally shared by the people, i.e. a classless society. Quite a biased report that I might add if you read the original. Like I said, you can name it whatever you like, it's how you implement it. Confederacy. Confederation, a union by compact or treaty between states, provinces or territories that creates a central government with limited powers. The constituent entities retain supreme authority over all matters except those delegated to the central government. Constitutional, a government by or operating under an authoritative document, constitution, that sets forth the system of fundamental laws and principles that determines the nature, functions and limits of that government. Constitutional democracy, a form of government in which the sovereign power of the people is spelled out in a governing constitution. Constitutional monarchy, a system of government in which a monarch is guided by a constitution whereby his or her rights, duties and responsibilities are spelled out in written law or by custom. Democracy. This is a complete oxymoron. A form of government in which the supreme power is retained by the people, but which is usually exercised indirectly through a system of representation and delegated authority periodically renewed. Democratic Republic, a state in which the supreme power rests in the body of citizens entitled to vote for officers and representatives responsible to them. Dictatorship, a form of government in which a ruler or small clique wield absolute power not restricted by a constitution or laws. That type of government is really what is required now, by a small clique of common sense, future thinking and all-inclusive people. Ecclesiastical, a government administered by a church. Emirate, similar to a monarchy or sultanate, a government in which the supreme power is in the hands of an emir, the ruler of the Muslim state, and the emir may be an absolute overlord or a sovereign with constitutionally limited authority. Federal, federation. A form of government in which sovereign power is formally divided, usually by the means of a constitution, between a central authority and a number of constituent regions, states, colonies, or provinces, so that each region retains some management of its internal affairs. This differs from a confederacy in that the central government exerts influence directly upon both individuals as well as upon the regional units. Federal Republic, a state in which the powers of the central government are restricted and in which the component parts, states, colonies or provinces, retain a degree of self-government. Ultimate sovereign power rests with the voters who choose their governmental representatives. Islamic Republic, a particular form of government adopted by some Muslim states, although such a state is, in theory, a theocracy, it remains a republic, but its laws are required to be compatible with the laws of Islam. Maoism, the theory and practice of Marxism-Leninism developed in China by Mao Zedong, which states that a continuous revolution is necessary if the leaders of a communist state are to keep in touch with the people. Marxism, the political, economic and social principles espoused by the 19th century economist Karl Marx. He viewed the struggle of workers as a progression of historical forces that would proceed from a class struggle to the proletariat, workers, exploited by capitalists, business owners, to a socialist dictatorship of the proletariat, to finally a classless society, communism. Marxism-Leninism, an expanded form of communism developed by Vladimir Lenin from doctrines of Karl Marx, and Lenin saw imperialism as the final stage of capitalism and shifted the focus of workers' struggle from developed to underdeveloped countries. Monarchy, a government in which the supreme power is lodged in the hands of a monarch, who reigns over a state or territory, usually for life, and by hereditary right. The monarch may be either a sole absolute ruler or sovereign, such as a king, queen, or prince, with constitutionally limited authority. The monarchy in Britain was ended in 1215 under the Magna Carta, and transferred to nobility, black nobility. Oligarchy, a government in which control is exercised by a small group of individuals, black sun, whose authority is generally based on wealth or power, black sun, Russia. Parliamentary democracy, a political system in which the legislator selects the government, a crime minister, a premier or chancellor, along with the cabinet ministers, according to party strength, as expressed in elections. And by this system, the government acquires a dual responsibility to the people as well as the parliament. Parliamentary government, cabinet, parliamentary government, a government in which members of an executive branch, the cabinet and its leader, a Prime Minister, Premier or Chancellor, are nominated to their positions by a legislator or Parliament and are directly responsible to it. This type of government can be dissolved at will by the Parliament by means of a no-confidence vote, or the leader of the Cabinet may dissolve the Parliament if it can no longer function. That's the British government. Parliamentary monarchy, a state headed by a monarch who is not actively involved in policy formation or implementation, i.e. the exercise of sovereign powers by a monarch in a ceremonial capacity. True governmental leadership is carried out by a cabinet and its head, a prime minister, premier or chancellor, who are drawn from the legislature. Presidential, a system of government where the executive branch exists separately from a legislature, to which it is generally not accountable. Republic, a representative democracy in which the people's elected deputies, representatives, not the people themselves, vote on legislation. Socialism, a government in which the means of planning, producing and distributing goods is controlled by a central government that theoretically seeks a more just and equitable distribution of property and labour. In actuality, most socialist governments have ended up being no more than dictatorships over workers by a ruling elite. Sultanate, similar to a monarchy, a government in which the supreme power is in the hands of a sultan, the head of a Muslim state. The sultan may be an absolute ruler or a sovereign with constitutionally limited authority. Theocracy, a form of government in which a deity is recognized as the supreme civil ruler, and the deity's laws are interpreted by ecclesiastical authorities, bishops and mullahs, a government subject to religious authority. Final one, totalitarian. Total ending of Aryan, that means. A government that seeks to subordinate the individual to the state by controlling not only all political and economic matters, but also the attitudes, values and belief of its population. Given the names and descriptions of that list, it seems America is in about 10 different categories. Now, there are benefits within several of those governments, even in communism, providing it is ran in the right way. But clearly, none of them are. Now, we often hear it in America, we are a republic, we are a democracy. But you're also presidential. You're also communist, and various others mentions of them. It all fits the description. And the goal for we the people is to come up with a viable alternative that works solely for the benefit of all people. But nowhere in that extensive list does it mention assembly governments. Yet more distraction. One of our members posted this. And apparently this is an assignment for a book called The Giver. And I'm going to highlight how they slide things in and what they're really up to with this. And it is an aptitude test and a clever data collection for the system to decide our future path. And people have to future think on this. This is an example of how to think different and also define and overcome their spellcasting. Answering questions in the yes and no is duality. What about your choice? That is the triality of any question format. Now, the first question they ask, are you a giver? And most will answer yes. But the answer back is, giver of what? What if someone gives you syphilis, herpes, or flu? Is that an example of giving? Question two. Is it better to be part of a community than to be an individual? Trick question again. And again, requires a question back. What community are you referring to? Because until you establish the community they are espousing, you cannot answer this question fairly. Question three. After all the eugenics of the past 48 hours, question three. People should only live a standard amount of time. Again, this is another question back. As three questions running now, they have not defined the description of the question. And most are forced into thinking they have to answer yes or no. But if you answer yes, and they make the decision of longevity for you, what if they say 49 years? Because the system needs less people over 50 now, as they take from the system, ignoring the fact it was those people of that age or over that age that actually funded the system. Question four. Memories and emotions just make life more complicated and are not needed. What a question that is. But it's a more subtle question that is asked to define your state and thinking process. But isn't that also espousing the city of light pill? Memories and emotions just make life more complicated and are not needed. Five, consistency is much more important than freedom. Again, they do not define what is consistency referring to. Rice pudding? Gravy? Six, citizens who break rules should not be a part of society anymore. Again, asking for a yes or no answer. When no boundaries or definitions are proffered. What are the rules? Is the question back. Seven, individuals should not make their own decisions. Others should make decisions for them. Oh dear. Finding out whether you think for yourself, minority, or those who are non-thinking and want others to think and do everything for them, as they have not developed beyond childhood. Can you see where this is going? Eight. Families should be limited in the amount of children they have. My answer would be yes, as anything over four is excessive. and not conducive to the growth of all children. And yes, in particular, when we're talking about bloodline families, perhaps they should have the China one child policy, or none, to be quite honest. Question 9. It would be great if climate is controlled, and even all the time. Again, it's a trick question. They have not determined what climate is being set, or what is even. Question 1 means you give to them. Question 2 is a hive-minded smart city. Question 3 is eugenics and euthanasia. Question 4 is cold, unemotional bots. Question 5, consistently lying to the people and the people dependent on it. Question 6 is a Hunger Games analogy. Question 7, a repeat of 5. They know better and you just have to follow them. Question 8 is sterilization and the governments deciding who can and can't have children. And question 9, their next moneymaker to harvest the rest of the funds. This is people being guided to think for them and their agenda. This is their Orwellian world. I've warned our members about Sasha Stone, not his real name, and his dodgy links to bloodline families, infamous Bali retreats and others. But here's a part of another expose on him which may be helpful to some of our newer members. And during Sasha Stone's Total Disclosure podcast, the guy exposing this showed receipts and testimonies. And in this particular chapter, the focus moved towards Sasha's handler, which may well be Robert David Steele. But also, it is Ciro Orsini, born in 1965 in Naples, Italy. He's not only a known restaurant owner, but also a proud member of the Orsini papal bloodline. And the records on Sasha's companies show the same names for the last 30 years. And this friendship with Ciro Orsini is a very long and fruitful relationship. Now, Ciro Orsini and his family all appear not only as former managers of Sasha's failed rock band, but also as part of the Mosaic Federation. That Mosaic Federation receives a percentage of the ITNJ donations. Oops. Now, I'm not sure at this point whether this is connected, but I looked up Mosaic. And it is also a new channel, news channel, and describes itself as Mosaic is a Jewish Federation TV news magazine exploring timely issues affecting the local and global communities. All names involved in it are Jewish and includes the pedophile family connected with Nexium, the Bronfmans. So, according back to the report, in essence, money donated by the people to ITNJ goes to Orsini and his criminal enterprise. Ciro Orsini appears to be as the listed rep for the Ciro Orsini and Armand Asante Children's Fund, which may or may not have other implications. For those that don't know, the papal bloodlines are the secret, shadowy hierarchy of the Jesuit order, even behind the Black Pope. These powerful bloodlines are the Breakspeare, Somaglia, Orsini, Farnese, Aldo, Brandini. These five dominating families unite with the Borgia, Shigi, Colonna, Conti, Este, Medici, which is where the term Medicean comes from, Pallavicini, and Pamphili to form the ancient 13th Saturnalian bloodlines. The Black Nobility. The 13 families, Saturnalian bloodlines. And according to the report, the most powerful man right now is none other than the Grey Pope. I disagree. I think it's the Black Pope. And the King of Rome, Pepe Orsini. And they said with the next Total Disclosure podcast, I will expose Orsini's Illuminati mafia connections. And they will also talk about Jill Weatherwax, Orsini's former sugar baby who was murdered under mysterious circumstances. And he also said he will expose Orsini's human trafficking operation and the secret societies he supplies sex slaves to. Sasha Stone's handler is Ciro Orsini. Right, where do we go next? We're going to delve into hidden realms now that too few are aware of. And this is a portion of a classified document that details the hidden underworld of the military and their research centers for warfare purposes. It outlines the staggering secrecy of it all, the staggering costs of it all, both of which the American public are oblivious to. The sheer evil ways these people operate within and by boggles the mind. But this is the US death and war machine cult at its worst. The summary of events and problems, U.S. Chemical Army Corps, October 1957. Yes, it went on that far back. Scientists attending meetings from chemical warfare laboratories, engineering command, Dugway Proving Grounds, which is Area 52, and it has little dancy things, people below the surface. Biological warfare laboratories, material command, chemical corpse board and chemical corpse school contributed 13 papers to this document. Mr. William G. Tank of Dugway Proving Grounds. Well, I never. I'm under the fall off the cliff. Received one of three $500 awards for outstanding papers, and his papers are being downwind dosage equations. Dr. Arthur J. Dazemian, Chemical Warfare Laboratories, received one of six $300 prizes. This was in 1957. And Dr. Zeman's paper was entitled Wound Ballistic Assessment of Bullets. Four other chemical corpse scientists, R.M. Acker, R.W. Heitmeyer, R.H. McQuain, and H.S. Greenfield, were awarded certificates for achievement. And all in all, Chemical Corpse papers received four awards out of 22 and they said this was an excellent showing. Badges and awards for Death Again. So what were they involved in? Well, this is the technical operations. V agents. The corps placed major emphasis on the development of a class of compounds known as the V agents. The V agents discovered in 1954 are very most prominent potential agents that have appeared since the Germans found the G agents in the 1930s. The G or GB agents are the nerve gas sarin. These compounds, judging by animal tests, are slightly more toxic than GB when inhaled, approximately 50 times more toxic when absorbed through the skin from a cloud, and several hundred times more toxic when absorbed through the skin form liquid droplets. It is percutaneous toxicity that makes the compounds particularly important, since a mask alone will not protect the soldier. He will need protective clothing, protective ointments, and if contaminated with V agents, prompt medical attention. The agents that have been given the most attention are given below, with their EA, Edgewood Arsenal number, and chemical corpse symbols. EA508-VG 00-diethyl S2 diethyl amino ethyl phosphorothiolate. EA511-VP3 pyridyl 335 trim ethyl cyclohexyl methyl phosphonate. EA5117 VE0 ethyl S2 2 diethyl amino ethyl with ethyl phosphonothiolate. EA1664 VM0 ethyl S2 diethyl amino ethyl methyl phosphonothiolate. EA1677 VS0 ethyl S2 isopropyl amino ethyl ethyl phosphonothiolate. EA1701 VX0 ethyl S2 isopropyl amino ethyl methyl phosphonothiolate. And in February 1957, if I can get my tongue back in my mouth after those words, the Research and Development Command selected the VX as the agents upon which to concentrate, which was the last one. And the chemical warfare laboratories, however, continued their investigations of the V agents under the possibility that one or more compounds superior to VX might be found. And the V agents evaporate more slowly than the G agents or mustard gas. The volatility of VX resembles that of lubricating oil. As a consequence, the compounds will probably be disseminated as liquid droplets, i.e. rain. As airborne clouds or in munitions, especially designed to penetrate clothing and allow the liquid to reach the skin. Droplets from spray tanks can contaminate equipment, buildings, vegetation, the ground, and unsheltered soldiers. Airborne clouds, in which the particles must be large enough to impact effectively on the skin, but small enough to not settle out, can find their way into buildings and field fortifications. The dissemination of V-agents has required the establishment of new techniques and means of valuation. For example, technicians must determine the most suitable particle size, taking into consideration the rate at which clouds will travel, the absorption through clothing and skin, and so on, and then try to adjust munitions to provide particles of the desired size. And the Corps have been studying the dispersion of V-agents by the so-called self-dispersing bomblets, which can be dropped from aircraft or guided missiles. To handle problems that will arise in the testing and evaluations of the V-agents, Dugway Proving Ground organised a V-agent team in April of 1957. The V-agents are similar to GB in general physiological action. Casualties caused by aerosol or liquid agents may occur within hours or minutes, depending on the amount that comes in contact with the soldier. If the soldier should happen to inhale the V-agents, he would be a casualty in a few minutes. The indicated treatment for the V-agents is the same as the G-agents, that is, by injection of atropine and artificial respiration. Laboratory experiments indicated that M5 ointments is as effective against V as it is against mustard gas. The Corps endeavoured to improve its ointments to better provide protection against both G and V agents. Here's a common sense statement. You can improve it totally by not having them. Just saying. As is the case with V agents, a field alarm and an area scanning alarm are extremely important for the rapid detection of V agents. The Corps have been developing the possibility of using LOPIR, long path infrared, equipment originally developed for G agents and V agent detection. While a standard mask is sufficient protection against vapor-borne V agents, standard protective clothing is less satisfactory. And one of the problems facing the personnel engaged in the development of protective items is the design of clothing, which will give soldiers much more protection against the new agents. How benevolent of them. During the year, the Corps prepared to produce V agents in chemical corp plants. The method of production and raw materials needed in the other technical services to be reduced by attrition. Dispersed stockage locations were reduced from 28 to 19 during 1957 without the expense of inter-depot shipments. Toxic planning and production. On July the 1st, 1956, the Chemical Corps Phosphate Development Works, PDW, at Muscle Shoals, Alabama, was transferred from the Chemical Corps Engineering Command to the Chemical Corps Material Command. PDW manufactured dichloro, formerly dichlor, the intermediate product for the manufacture of GB nerve gas by the dimethyl hydrogen phosphite process. Engineering Command assigned a project engineer to the supervision of phosphorus oxychloride reduction facility, where the only remaining principal production problem remained to be solved. And this facility, which reduced production step 3 by product phosphorus oxychloride to step 1 raw material, phosphorus trichloride, had never been able to keep pace either with the amount of the material requiring reduction or with demands for raw material. Now, during 1957, optimum operating conditions for reduction furnaces using modified refractory furnace lining was established in the phosphorus oxychloride reduction facility, and data thus collected permitted a calculation of a predictable furnace run of 100 days at an average reduction rate of 50 tons per day. 50 tons per day, which would support a 100 tons per day production rate of dichloro. Such maximum performances, they said, represented full operation of the plant without the necessity for sale of phosphorus oxychloride to private industry. Other production accomplishments at PDW, they do like to backslap themselves, including the installation of a vacuum jet system to replace centrifugal vacuum pumps in step one, and the operation of the entire plant on production capability runs at a rate exceeding mobilization objectives. Now, the jet system allowed operation of step one at peak rates of 77 tons per day at qualities as high as 92.5%. And the production capability runs demonstrated that dichloro production rates of 75 tons or better were possible in sustained production. A 45 ton per day rate was considered acceptable for round out purposes. Round out of the facility at Rocky Mountain Arsenal, Colorado, where the last two steps of the agent production process take place, was substantially complete in the first quarter of 1957. There was no significant production difficulties through modification of equipment. Major and minor repair work and maintenance work proceeded throughout the year. Demands did not require agent production on a sustained basis, but production during the second and third quarters was 6,055,877 pounds of agent at a yield of 88.3% for the second quarter and 91.77% for the third quarter. 6 million pounds of toxic agent in just 6 months. The question is, where did all these toxic agents go? Now, during the second quarter, the plant operated at 85.4% and the third quarter 90.2% of the available time, notably exceeding the sustained run of the fiscal year 1956, when the plant was inoperable 17.7% of the available time. Now, the average feed rate for the second quarter was 170%, and for the third quarter, 197.6% of the round-out schedule. Now, two peaks of 240% feed rate was attained. The sustained rates and the peaks were a clear indication of high mobilization potential. Enlisted scientific and professional personnel made significant contributions to production and operation accomplishments both at Muscle Shoals and at Rocky Mountain Arsenal. The two waste disposal facilities planned at Rocky Mountain Arsenal in 1956 were put into operation during 1957. The evaporative waste disposal lake was installed on October the 27th. The evaporative waste disposal lake. And the chlorine plant reduction of byproduct hydrochloric acid during the second quarter production run. Both methods of disposal were successful, although there was storm damage to the lake during the year. which likely caused runoff in that region. Wonder if the death rates went up in northern Colorado after that. As of the end of year, plans were being made to designate the chlorine plant as an operating adjunct of the GB plant. Agent produced during fiscal year 1957 and that carried over from the fiscal year 1956 was used to fill ton containers, M360 shells and M121 shells. Production to meet total requirements for these purposes was near completion at the end of the fiscal year, and an attempt to revise these requirements to provide for a larger mobilization agent stockpile was not successful. The principal problem was that there has been no basic agreement on a basic day of supply for toxic munitions. The Assistant Chief Chemical Officer for Planning and Doctrine was working to establish the criteria for day of supply calculation at the end of the fiscal year, but meanwhile, the Deputy Chief of Staff for Logistics ordered the cessation of agent production in early 1958, since budget-supported force requirements would be met. Now, during 1957, a new agent was being considered for production. The chief chemical officer, on the advice of a committee appointed to consider V agent production plans, directed that the target for operation of a continuous process, 10 ton per day V agent production plant, be moved from June 1962 to January 1960. Slightly more than $36 million was requested from higher authority for the accomplishment of this goal. The question we must ask, who is the higher authority? As of the end of the fiscal year, the Deputy Chief of Staff for Logistics had directed $29.9 million of this sum, representing actual construction of the plant, be deferred from fiscal year 1958 to fiscal year 1959 programming. A fiscal year, in case you don't know, runs from September to September. And it was expected that a reconsideration of this decision would be requested early in the fiscal year of 1958. Unreal is how I would describe that. Final portion tonight. I think you've learnt enough. Perhaps with the last piece, you have to realise more. There was a discussion this week about who are the top of the tree in terms of the control system. And of course, in the past, until it was decimated, before our ambassador took her role, it was the Draco, the Parents, the Covent, and then Illuminati, or the other several names they went by. But the Illuminati are the low-level puppets, they always were. So are the Club of Rome, the Bilderbergers, the Trilateral Group, the Committee of the 300, Le Cercle, CIA, DIA, and GIA. Throw in your think tanks like Tavistock, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, of which you will find all politicians or prominent people have engaged with and in all of them are puppets to the old system. The Illuminati disbanded and broke into factions, of which there were five or potentially six. But those five or six all had the two main groups of factions within their faction, the Rothschilds and the Black Sun. They install their people in all areas so they win. But let us not forget, the top of the tree was cut down. And so now all these puppets, none of which have a clue, as there is no direction from the top anymore. Now these people and entities think that they are the top of the tree. But what they fail to realize is that tree was cut down to a rotting stump and being fed on by the insects. Oh, the irony. The giant tree of life. Theirs was the Kabbalah tree, the tree of Darth, death. It was so big it stifled all growth in the surrounding forest. You're riding the endless caravan, bonded and sold as a slave, or thrive within and of your own sovereignty. Sleep with the devil and then you must pay. Sleep with the devil will take you away. Or you observe, not absorb, and dance within. Let go of your self-made prison bars and set yourself free. In nature there is no void. New growth must arise. We the people are that new growth. We are the saplings. We are not the phoenix from the ashes. We are the eagles that soar from above. We are the butterflies emerging from the caterpillar. We have to plant the seeds of growth to allow all to grow at the same time, so the forest blooms again in harmony with each other and nature. You want climate change? You want environmental change? We the people are both. You change the climate by changing the people's energy fields. You change the environment by becoming the forest of growth and living in harmony. The question is, will you stand watching the rotten stump decay and we all die with it, or plant your new seeds of growth? Choose wisely. This has been the Truth, Honour and Integrity Show. My name's Thomas Williams. Bye for now.